It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. David Ruddock, managing editor of Android Police. We're going to talk about Mr. Pachai's visit to Washington, D.C., and the group of clueless congresspeople who met with him. The latest on Huawei and Supermicro, kind of a surprising Supermicro story in the news. And then a look at the second most hated video on YouTube. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 486, recorded Wednesday, December 12th, 2018, The Road to None of It. This Week at Google is brought to you by Slide Belts from Brig Taylor. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. Get a better belt for yourself and your loved ones this holiday season. Go to slidebelts.com/twit and use the code TWIT for 20% off. And by Cashfly. Make this the last month your CDN bill gives you a headache. Join the thousands of others who trust Cashfly's reliable network. Visit twit.cashfly.com to get up to $5,000 in CDN service credits when you sign up by December 20th and migrate in 2019. And by Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups. Get the card free, and Twit listeners get Brex card fees waived in perpetuity at brex.com/twit. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, a show where we talk about the latest news from the Googleverse, which includes the Facebookverse, the Twitterverse, and the Mediaverse. But I'm not adverse to introducing Mr. Jeff Jarvis, professor of journalism at the City University of New York, BuzzMachine.com.
Hey,
hello.
Hey.
I got actually a question to ask you that's not about Google. Before I do that, I also want to introduce, Stacy's not here this week. David Ruddock is, though. He's managing editor at Android Police. First time on the show. Yay. Welcome, David. Good to see you.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
Anybody who's watched All About Android knows David well. But I want to ask you, Jeff, because Apple came out with, finally, its cardiogram feature on the Apple Watch, where people, it's a two-lead cardiogram, much like the Cardia device that AliveCor makes. One lead is on your wrist already as part of the watch. The other lead is the stem of the watch. And it will say,
How they did it.
Yeah.
Oh.
So it's kind of like the AliveCor, which I know you like and have loved. And the reason I ask is there's nobody I know besides you that's had AFib. And the first thing Apple says when you sign up for it, when you turn it on, is this does not diagnose heart attacks or strokes. Although I think maybe they should even emphasize that a little bit more, because if you are having a heart attack and you do this, that's the wrong thing to do. Right?
You say, hey, Siri, call 911.
Call 911 right now and get to the hospital, even if you're not sure. But you'd think that this is a useful tool for people who have AFib.
Yeah. Is it FDA approved the way the AliveCor thing is?
It is FDA approved under a kind of an exemption for new devices, to fast track new devices.
So the way that the AliveCor works is the first time you take your pulse with it, you don't get it right away. It is evaluated by a medical professional.
Doesn't do that.
So AliveCor, I think, has still a higher standard. And the EKG that I send in is perfectly acceptable to my cardiologist.
Yeah. This actually is giving me a diagnosis right now. Sinus rhythm. This ECG does not show signs of atrial fibrillation. Then it says, right under Apple Watch, cannot check for signs of a heart attack. If you believe you're having a medical emergency, call emergency services.
Of course, all that is in little tiny type that you have to scroll up. Yeah. Meanwhile, you're having a heart attack. But
right.
Just don't click the accept button.
Yeah. So this is very different from the AliveCor. The AliveCor will never tell you have a sinus rhythm, right? Or will it?
Oh, yes. That's exactly what it does.
It does. But with this does it without that first step of sending it to a physician,
which is what the FTC had insisted on. So I wonder what the difference here is in certification.
Yeah,
and whether that EKG, does that produce an EKG for you?
Well, you see it
on your phone.
You see it doing the thing.
Do you get it recorded on your phone?
Oh, that's a good question. Like I could set, because that's what you do with the Cardia. You send it into send the resulting EKG to your physician, or their physician if you don't have a physician. Let me see Apple Health. if they've put a it will give you irregular heart notifications. Okay. Here are the ECGs that I've done.
And can you send that to a doctor?
Boy, that one's very different. The one I just did does not look good compared to that one.
Usually when it starts up or you're talking or things
I was talking. Yes, export a PDF for your doctor.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And again, if you're having a heart attack or medical emergency, call emergency services. So they try really hard to... They're, you know, everybody's raving about this. There's already posts on Reddit of, oh, the Apple Watch saved my life. A doctor told somebody who went into the hospital after being diagnosed with AFib by his watch, oh, you should buy Apple stock. They just saved your life. Of course,
but let's be clear here that AFib, though I love to get sympathy for it and whine about it, is it's not directly fatal. The problem with AFib is when your heart is beating irregularly, in the pools in the heart where blood gets undisturbed, a blood clot can form. And that can in turn go out and cause havoc. But that's the risk of AFib. Some people live with AFib the rest of their lives.
So I kind of worry that this is A, overhyped, and B, could actually lead to some harm. I've showed before, we showed it today, yesterday on MacBreak Weekly, a Medium article from a cardiologist who said he's not at all happy about this because diagnostics of healthy patients often lead to harm because of the false positive, the chance for false positive and prescription and so forth.
Okay, whining doctors. That's one matter. That's one matter if you get falsely diagnosed for breast cancer or something and you go under the knife as a result. In this case, if you think you have AFib and you go in, you're going to get on a real EKG and they're going to say, yeah, you're in or you're, no,
right,
you're not.
Right.
And the thing about this is there's two things about this that are good for us AFibbers, as we call ourselves.
No, you don't. Do you really?
Yeah. Oh, you're an AFib.
I believe it's called trekkers. I just,
One is I happen to be highly symptomatic.
You know it's happening to you.
As a British friend of mine said, when I have a dicky ticker, I know it, right? I'm saying, ooh. And yeah. So the cardio lets me confirm. And right. And once I thought I was in and I wasn't, and you know, half an hour later I realized no, I wasn't. So it can actually reduce the false positives.
Ah.
The second thing is,
well, unless you really are having atrial fibrillation, the watch is wrong and you don't seek treatment. That would be a false.
Right, but again, because I happen to be symptomatic, I tend to know. I was just very,
you know.
Yeah. If you're asymptomatic, if you don't know when you're in AFib, yeah. No, you should you don't introduce me. Yeah. But the second thing about this that I haven't followed, but I'm almost surprised my cardiologist didn't do this. So I'm supposed to be on blood thinner. I'm supposed to be on this awful blood thinner where you have to go in once a week and get checked. Ugh. And you get bruised and you feel old. And I hate the crap. And because I am so symptomatic, I don't really need to do that. I argued with my cardiologist. He finally gave in because I can be an a-hole. And so I'm on just a major aspirin a day, a big aspirin a day. If I go into AFib, if they don't zap me, clear!
Oh, yeah.
Within 24 hours.
To restore the sinus rhythm.
Then they won't do it for a month.
Wow.
And because then that happened to me once. And I had to go on a trip to London. Oh, and I was just dragging. And during that time, I had to inject myself in the tummy with a major blood thinner.
Oh, my God.
So they're guaranteed. Because the fear is if they do clear. When you have a blood clot in your heart, it's going to go shoving that out into your brain and you have a stroke and you die.
Oh, great.
So they won't do that. So once I was in this time when I was in AFib, the damn different doctor who I fired, no, I'm not going to do anything. No. So then it was beyond 24 hours. So the next thing they do is they put you out and they stick a sonogram thing down your throat to the level of your heart to see if they can find any clots. And if they find a clot, they say, you're not getting cleared or cardioverted, as they say. And you're going to spend a month thinning your blood. Jeez. So point of all this is, sorry, I know folks, just old guys just talk about their ailments.
And
sorry
then my back all up and down my spine is shooting pain.
What could happen with, if these things work well and you check once a day, then you know that within the last 24 hours, if you now go into AFib, you know that within the last 24 hours, you weren't in AFib. Oh. And so they can cardiovert you. So I think the doctor is full of crap. And I think these things can have real benefit. But I'm no doctor.
Okay, good. No, I kind of withheld. I wanted to talk about it with you because you're the only person I know who's had. And also, you use the cardia. So
I use the cardia, yeah.
So it does, at the very least, it raises awareness. Though I would say it's really important, and Apple seems to do at least a pretty good job of saying, hey, this is not for heart. It's not for anything but one particular case. Although you see ECG, you kind of think, oh, this is good. This is my whole heart. I know, you know, my heart.
Now imagine, I've talked about this with our friend, the former head of the soon-to-be-deceased Google Plus, who's now at Cardia, at AliveCor. Help me.
You know, what's his name?
You know, the former head of Google Plus.
Yes.
Oh, shoot.
Why can't I remember his name either?
I'm doing this live. Vic Gundotra. Good friend Vic.
Gundotra.
So I was talking to Vic about the product, and now imagine, and this is going to send, you know, people crazy with, privacy, but imagine the correlation data you start to drive.
Well, this is where Apple excels, because Apple does do that. They have a heart study. They have a number of things on here. And people seem to trust Apple a little bit more than they do Google.
Yeah, and AliveCor has this data now, too. So you can you can tie it to AliveCor has you record how you feel.
Yeah, same thing here.
Orally.
Yep. What symptoms are you feeling? Yep.
And, you know, where you are, what time of day it is. You know, you ate in a Mexican restaurant last night, you know, whatever. There's a lot of potential to show correlation here, which I think is going to be really interesting because they really don't know what causes an onset. And they don't know the risk factors of an onset sufficiently, and with enough data and with people trusting on privacy, this is an example of
big data being beneficial.
Beneficial, yes. And why it is beneficial to other AFibbers in life to share your data.
Right. David, do you have any chronic illnesses you'd like to share with us?
You know, I don't think so today. Maybe for my second appearance, I want to say something.
You should be really glad, David, we're not talking about prostate cancer today.
Google Plus, you brought it up. So there's been a second breach with the Google Plus API. It sounds like, and I'm not clear on this, but maybe, David, you know, it might be related to the fix of the API for the first breach.
You know, honestly, I've really tuned out of the Google Plus news.
You're not that interested, huh?
Because I haven't read about the breach at all. I just know that for whatever reason they decided it's serious enough to be like, is anybody going to complain if we shut it down 4 months earlier? No? All right.
Crickets.
Yeah.
In October, Google Plus announced that Google announced that there was an issue with Google Plus API that allowed a malicious third-party app to get data that was marked as private from the user's profile. Google said, to our knowledge, no one's done this, although we don't really save records of it. It's been going on for 3 years. But then they said, so we're going to shut down Google Plus in a year, in 2019. Then they discovered another one just this week, and they posted, with the discovery of this new bug, we've decided to expedite the shutdown of all Google Plus APIs. This will occur in the next 90 days.
So the API goes down. When does the service go down?
And then the service sunsets from August 2019. Well, this doesn't make any sense. Oh, we've decided to accelerate the sunsetting, which was set for August to April of next year. So, and again, as you said, David, a great yawn was heard around the world.
As much as I want to kind of mourn Google Plus, I can't. I really just can't.
The voices of thousands of Google Plusers screamed out in ennui.
I think it's worth a moment of small sadness.
I think Google Plus had such potential. I look at people like Trey Ratcliffe, who made such a difference to his career posting photos. It was great for photos. I posted on it. You posted on it. Mike Elgin, you know, went down with the ship. I think he hasn't been heard from since. So for a lot of people, Google Plus was the right social network. And Elgin's pointed out many times, and I think he's right, that the features that Google Plus had for blocking users and moderating comments made it a much better place to share than Facebook and Twitter.
I think it was definitely a very insular place if you wanted it to be. And you had to curate, though. That was, I think, the thing. You had to be very active with Google Plus in order to get much out of it. It wasn't something you could glance at once in a while and cater to that just kind of immediate, just, you know, IV of, you know, information that Twitter and Facebook give you. Google Plus, you kind of had to be like, okay, I need to look at my communities. You know, who am I following? You know, how do I get all this good stuff? Google Plus never felt like Google. Oddly, for something from Google, Google Plus never felt like it was trying to throw the information in front of you to get you to click. Google Plus felt like something you created for yourself.
Yeah, that's why I liked it. And people like Trey and Mike did it in lieu of a blog, right? It was their presence on the net in some respects.
Yeah.
But you make a good point. That did require a lot of interaction to keep it up. And I think also making circles was a mistake. They backed off on that. But in the beginning, you had to kind of pick your circles. It also,
but everybody thought that was brilliant because that was solving the Facebook everything is public problem. Right. So, but it was too much work.
It did solve the problem, but a lot of effort on the part of the user. Mark Zuckerberg famously said, nobody wants to make lists.
Yeah,
he was actually talking about Facebook, but he was right also about Google Plus. Nobody wants to. It was too much work. I think part of the problem was that it was so intermingled with your other Google presence that, for instance, I still have Google Plusers in my contact list and I still get birthdays.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. And that's not what you wanted. When you put somebody in a circle, you didn't want to make them your best buddy. I don't care about somebody's birthday from Google Plus.
I don't care about, let's be clear here, anybody's birthday.
Yeah. But especially anybody.
When you're my age, you don't care about
anybody's birthday. I feel the same. Yeah.
I'll be dead by then, but when Zuckerberg is my day, he's going to regret that birthday crap.
He's
not going to want it on there because don't remind me.
I've deactivated my Facebook account, but I had to reactivate it for that Facebook portal. But I made sure that 2 days before my birthday, I deactivated it again because I didn't want anybody to wish me happy birthday. So I'm with you. I'm exactly with you.
Yeah.
So Google Plus is going to die even
with
soon.
With all my ailments, you see, I'd like it. Oh, I made it another one. Year.
No. People don't understand that. Past a point, you don't really celebrate this. It's nothing to be happy about. So Google Plus will continue as an enterprise product, which is weird.
What?
Oh yeah, you didn't know that? It's part of G Suite.
Oh goody. I get that. I can't sign into anything, but I get Google Plus.
I feel like that's what Google does with everything now. Well, the product's going away. We're pivoting it to enterprise.
Yeah. Just throw it into G Suite. Nobody will. Jeez Louise. Oh, okay. Well, that's our lead story. The death of Google Plus. Let's see what else. Oh, speaking of deaths, Allo is now about to go.
And pivot tables.
Really? No more pivot tables?
Yeah, pivot tables are going.
No one could figure out how to use them, probably. Allo, which was, I thought, really cool. In fact, the only person I ever exchanged messages with on Allo was you, Jeff. remember right, that when it first came out?
And same for you. Yeah. It was our little intimate moment.
Back and forth, and that was it.
We were alone in the world.
I said, happy birthday, and he cut me off. So now, I do this every once in a while. The other night I woke up, and I pulled out my Pixel 3, and I downloaded every possible program to do text messaging. Because, you know, Google does allow you to make your default text message app be some other app. And then I figured out after a while, because Hangouts still was getting all the messages, you also have to go into Hangouts and tell Hangouts, knock it off. And so it's two steps. But nothing is as good as Hangouts in terms of, A, I want it to be cross-platform. I want to be able to get it on my iPhone and my Android phone. I tried Luke Klinker's Pulse, but you can't do it on iPhone. Apple won't let him. Put a Pulse version. But that's Apple. And then I don't know why they let Hangouts be on the iPhone, but they do. And I tried a bunch of different Facebook Messenger. Oh, it's so ugly. I can't. And so finally I put Hangouts back after a few hours trying everything that's out there. It needs to be cross-platform. It needs to work on my desktop. It needs to work with Google Fi because that's, you know, that's my Pixel. It's only Hangouts. Will Hangouts survive? They said that we're going to keep Hangouts alive for one more year, and then we're going to move you to Hangouts Chat and Meet. David, we've never had you discuss this. Please explain to me Google's messaging strategy.
I don't think Google knows what its messaging strategy is, and I think that's the problem. And I think that what I've heard is that Google really – nobody knew that moving all these people to Hangouts, Chat, and Meet was going to happen before it was announced by the head of product on Twitter. Like, he just went on there, went on a tirade, and then said, yeah, we've already got a plan. We're moving everybody over. And apparently it's a bunch of people on Teams, like, news to us. So,
that's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody at Google knew.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. And it's not even clear how the transition is going to work. And it sounds like they're going to have to take a bunch of people off product teams, on Hangouts Chat who are working on features and have to put them on migration duty because the roadmap has changed now.
And that, of course, as you know, that's huge for your career if you're on migration duty.
Yes.
People don't know that's how Sundar Pichai became CEO of Google. He was on migration duty. All the glory and the money.
And it really is. It's just clear. It's just they're doing is saying to the people who are on Hangouts, the diehards who are left, like, we're not going to leave you out in the cold. But it's really just appeasement. There's no plan going forward. They're not going to evolve this.
Do you use Android Messages, which is now called completely generically and ambiguously Messages?
I do, and I use it because honestly, I live mostly in a web browser, and so the web interface works for me.
Yeah, you got a desktop interface, which is good.
Yeah.
And that's how Hangouts works on the desktop, too. You have to have a Chrome plugin. You have to have Chrome.
Yeah, and I think the fact is how many new people have you talked to on Hangouts lately? Well, nobody's going there.
But it's my SMS app, see? So I use it on Google Fi for SMS. So I talk to everybody on Hangouts.
Yeah, I thought they were going to – I wonder if they're going to sunset that. They're probably going to get rid of
that. Well, then I'm screwed. I can't see that. That's surviving. My fear. And that's why I looked at Pulse and Textra, Facebook Messages, Signal, Telegram. Tried them all. They all can be your default SMS client. But I don't know. It just
– I'm still in denial about the death of Inbox. They finally get me used to it.
Yes.
And then it's
same
gone.
Thing. I hate these guys.
You know how you knew it was going to die? There were never ads in it.
Are there ads in your Android Messages?
In Gmail. I mean, we just read when Jen was talking about Inbox there.
So you're using it, and you're using it with a carrier that does RCS, David?
I wish. No. RCS, I think, will be intercompatible across all four carriers sometime in 2035.
we'll look forward to that.
Yeah, they've really shown how well they can drag their feet on
Do you use Fi, David, or?
I was on Fi for a few months. It really didn't fit into my kind of data usage lifestyle, I guess I'd say. But I use Messages just because SMS is kind of the default I go to if I'm talking to somebody either I haven't talked to in a while or whose contact information on a social network I don't have. And so it's easier. That and the web interface. The web interface keeps me coming back.
Yeah, I'm really – now that we have a web interface for Messages, it makes me much happier.
So you don't use Hangouts either, Jeff?
No, I use Messages.
So maybe I have to go to Messages. I mean, clearly Google wants me to go to Messages, obviously. Even on Fi, they want you to go to Messages.
No, to be clear, I am in a multi-messaging app hellscape. I'm on WhatsApp. I'm on Facebook Messenger. I'm on Android Messages. I'm still on Hangouts as well. And I also use Telegram for work communication when we're at events. So it's not fun.
So, David, do you have the problem that I have? So I'll see an alert come up for a message. Register that. Oh, yeah, so-and-so. So Leo just messaged me.
Now find it.
And that exactly. I have spent 10 minutes going, is it Facebook? Was it Facebook Messenger? Was it Messages? Was it Hangout? Was it, because somebody probably Leo wants to say something to me. He's the only person on earth who would do it in Allo.
I guess I understand that somebody in the chat room is pointing this out. And it's really true. I have an unusual use case because I have more than one phone some of them are iOS. If you only had one phone, one Android phone and one desktop, I guess it'd be fine to use Messages. But if I use Messages, then I won't get the message on my other iOS phone. But I understand. I'm definitely an edge case, so I shouldn't complain. I should just shut up.
Just suffer with the rest of us.
If Apple made Messages work on Android, I would use that.
Fat chance.
I know. And it's such an opportunity for them. They could even monetize it.
Huge opportunity. Yeah. Well, for instance, you can pay stuff people with Apple Messages. And I think everybody would use it, except that because you can't pay Android people, you use Venmo instead because you could pay. It's cross-platform. You need to have certain things need to be cross-platform. Messaging, payments. There's certain things that just have to be cross-platform.
They could make Apple pay for Android, too. There's no reason they couldn't.
That's exactly right.
It's just one of those things where it's like...
Oh, I don't know.
Is Google Pay available on Apple?
Oh, that's
can you change the payment provider on iOS? I don't think you can.
Here's my larger question. What equivalent Google to the list you just made? What equivalent Google apps work
Hangouts.
On Apple? Hangouts, right.
That's why I use Hangouts.
Allo does for the time being.
for two weeks.
There you go. I don't know what to say.
Google Pay on the App Store, yes.
I wish we could just, like, by fiat, say everybody has to use Telegram or everybody has to use WhatsApp. Or you know what I'd really like? Everybody has to use Signal.
Yeah.
Signal's cross-platform, but Signal doesn't let you have two phone numbers for the same account. It's tied to the phone number. So when I set up Signal on one phone, I can't have it on the other phones. So that's for security, I understand, but that's... All right, Mr. Pichai goes to Washington. We'll talk about that in a second. We're glad to have you. David Ruddock, managing editor of Android Police. First time on the show. Be nice, folks. No, they're always nice.
When are we not?
They mean to. It's entertaining.
Jeff Jarvis, they're never nice to you. BuzzMachine.com. Did you know he's the Leonard Tow Professor for Journalistic Innovation at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York? Did you know that? He does. Our show today brought to you by your belt, Jeff. My belt, too. We love our slide belts. Now, the problem
click,
with
click,
belts...
Click, 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 click.
I know. Isn't that sound great? The problem with belts is they were designed... I think the belts are older than forks. Belts were designed in, the 8th century, maybe even older than that. Take a piece of leather, of animal skin, punch hole in it, tie it up around waist. Problem is, 5-6 holes... One of them has to work. Otherwise, your pants fall down. Or worse, your pants, you can't talk because they're so tight. Belts just are old-fashioned. That's why slide belt is a better way. Slide belts by Brig Taylor. It's time for the holiday season. If you're trying to find a gift your loved one will love and is guaranteed to fit, look no further than slide belts by Brig Taylor. These guaranteed to fit. So here's how the slide belt comes. This is my twit. Monogram belt, which I really like. You can get a monogram. This is a chrome with, I think this is vegan leather. They have top grain leather. They have full grain. You could get, you get your choice. What happens is it's all one size. You cut this end. It's got measurements on it to fit your general waist size. And then you put it in here. This is changeable. So the slide belts are interchangeable. So now it's part of the slide belt. And this is my favorite part. When you put the belt on, it's got this patented ratchet mechanism. Not 6 holes, 32 little notches. And you're, by the way, it looks like you could do about 6 inches either way from. So, you really have some room for growth, shall we say? And listen, when you put it on, it sounds so good. There's the ratchet right like that. Although, when you loosen it, completely silent. So get it just right so your pants are comfortable but aren't going to fall off. Then if you have a big meal or you just want to relax at the end of the day, you slide it open a little bit more. I love these. And they have every style. Unisex survival belts for adults, colorful belts for kids. This is a blue canvas, and I really like this buckle on this, the distressed chrome. They call it brass buckle with a navy canvas belt. They can be worn casually. This would be perfect for casually around the house. Or for, you know, dress or any special occasion. And let me show you this. If you're going out in the woods, if you go out in the woods today, prepare for a big surprise. This is the Slide Belt Survival Belt. This thing. Did we give you one of these, Jeff?
No. Oh. I don't think you trust me with that.
So it looks like a regular belt. But inside, it's got a very sharp knife. Look at that. It's also got a bottle opener. It's got a flashlight, very bright LED flashlight. And it's got a fire starter. And that's all inside your belt. So if you get lost in the woods, no fear. Slide Belts is here. This is the Slide Belt Survival Belt. And I have to say, I bet you could get through TSA with that one. Because you can't tell. It just looks like a regular belt buckle. Don't try, please. And don't write to me if you don't.
Leo said.
He kept officer, my belt.
Leo said.
But they, you know, you put it through the x-ray, they might, I guess they'd know what it is. But it really looks cool. This would be great for a groomsman's gift, you know, for a wedding, something like that. They also offer swappable watch bands for ultimate customization. Look, there's some great stuff. Click the gift sets tab there. Those are already heavily discounted, so they don't apply. The TWIT code doesn't apply to them. But you're going to get some great deals on a variety of belts and watches and so forth. And everything else on the site, when you use the offer code TWIT at checkout, you get 20% off your order. Go to slidebelts.com/TWIT. Again, use the code TWIT at checkout. 20% off your entire order. This is the place to get all that shopping done for the holidays. And see, when it comes time to change the belt out, a key or anything, you can just loosen this and the strap comes out. Well, it'll never come out by accident, but it's easy to get out. And then you can put another buckle on it. So it's very customizable. Slidebelts.com/TWIT. Mr. Pichai goes to Washington. Sundar Pichai, the CEO of Google. There were some great, it's so fun to watch our Congress attempt to understand technology. Steve King, everybody's favorite Nazi representative, holds up his iPhone and says, how come when my, what was this, his niece, his daughter searches for
his granddaughter.
My granddaughter.
No, granddaughter wasn't searching. Granddaughter was on some game. And then I'm guessing it was an alert. Up pops her grandfather with something awful about him. That's because he does awful things. Your grandpa is a racist.
Yes. And he holds up his phone, and Sundar has to say, the iPhone's made by another company. I don't know anything about that. And then King says, well, maybe it wasn't this phone, but it might have been an Android phone. Then they say, well, why is it when we search on Google for idiot, we get pictures of the president? Why is that, Sundar Pichai? What was Sundar's response to that?
Sundar explained that they just are looking at the data from what people do. Internet. That was a Democrat who asked that, actually.
Algorithms, man.
Algorithms.
Algorithms. And then
but before we go on, let me just point out, you know, because part of this hearing is because of this contention that Google somehow stifles conservative thought. It's, you know, what you don't want Google to do is to say, oh, look, every time somebody searches for idiot, they're getting President Trump. We better fix that. That's what you don't want to have
don't
happen.
Want. Right.
That's
right.
Called editorializing.
So what Pichai said is, at some point, is there's not a little man there editing these things.
That's what right? I tell
it's,
my parents.
It's hugely data.
There's not a little man in your computer.
I was on MSNBC this morning with Stephanie Ruhle talking about this.
I love her. Give her my regards. She's awesome.
She's great. She's just great. So I made a list of the idiocies, right? You have Bob Goodlatte starting off saying, you have more data. You have so much data it would make NSA blush.
Oh, no, sir.
Mr. Goodlatte, shouldn't the NSA make you blush since it knows a hell of a lot more than Google does and it victimized Google? Yeah. Then you have Steve King. Then you have Zoe Lofgren. Then Steve Cohen, who's a Democrat, wanted a help tutorial line for people.
Oh, please.
Because it's too stupid to use search.
Oh, please.
And then he complained, I'm on MSNBC. I had appearances on MSNBC. I had 8 appearances on MSNBC. They don't come up. And then you had Matt Gaetz wanting to know how many liberal employees there are. That's a little scary. Then you have Steve Chabot, C-H-A-B-O-T, I don't know, that he was amazed that if you search for American Healthcare Act, that was the Trump one, all these bad things come up. People are saying.
Now, let me say this, though, and somebody in the chat room is pointing this out. Some years ago, when people were searching for Michelle Obama in the image search, you got pictures of gorillas. And Google fixed that, did they not?
Yeah, it wasn't Michelle Obama. It was searching for gorillas, and then African Americans would come up. So now you basically can't search for gorilla because they don't know how to deal with some of these things. So they did a broad brush.
They can fix stuff like that.
They can fix. Oh, that's they do, but that's not saying that. Mr. Cohen, you think that your MSNBC appearances should be higher than
CNN. You don't get to choose that.
You don't get to choose that. And there's not a little man. And then finally there was Ted Poe, who got really angry. Does this know where I am? Oh. Well, it depends on your default settings. Oh, you make millions of dollars. He gets all mad at him. Well, Mr. Poe, when you leave and you say, find me the nearest pizza, how can it do that if it doesn't know where you are? It's just the idiocy is tremendous. So what I said on MSNBC this morning was, should they be more regulated? I said, after this performance yesterday, who do you want to be running the internet, Google or Congress? I'll take Google.
Well, I'm not sure I want that either.
I think there's some room in the middle there.
Yes.
Not with this Congress, I don't think.
So what about this, though, this New York Times article? Your apps know where you were last night.
Moral panic.
And they're keeping it secret. Well, but wait a minute. Some apps.
It did have a nifty graphic, though.
Yeah, it does have a very nice graphic.
Yeah, it got very impressed with itself, yes.
Some apps don't need constantly to track where you are to work. I agree. If you're searching for pizza, you want to know pizza, often want to know pizza near you. And the Weather Channel has to obviously know where you are to give you weather. But that doesn't mean they have to sell that information to third parties, right? I think it's reasonable to say, okay, some apps need location information, but to constrain how they're using it or no.
Depends.
Or at least they need to. They need to
at
tell
least give you transparency
clearly.
Into it, and the easy ability to turn it off. Yeah. That I agree. With. That yeah. I agree.
And I'll tell you why. Location information. At first, it just sounds like, well, they know where I go, but there's all sorts of things you can deduce with location information. For instance, if I, as a married man, spend the night at some other person's house, and they know where she was because of her location information,
how is anyone going to get to that data, though? Lee?
Well, I don't know. If you're selling to third parties.
It's the could chain here.
Okay.
Well, I'll give you one that's scary.
They're also selling it to hedge funds, right, to decide what investments to make or what
investments it's data.
To sell.
It's data about human behavior.
Yeah.
I'll give you one. I'm going to give up my number because this one is relevant to what we're doing here. If you go down to the numbers, Scientific American, this will raise lots of questions. So a study determined that Google searches on an individual level could predict heroin overdoses.
Well, why? Because you're searching for Narcan?
You're looking for various things.
Yeah.
And so it predicts hospital visits based on
accurately
drug usage with some level of accuracy, right?
The person who created this report actually celebrated it because it gives us new innovative approaches to analyzing data relating to the opioid epidemic. In other words, this isn't a negative. This is a positive.
It's a positive, but you're that one opioid drug user.
Right.
And do you fear they're going to come knocking down your door? You're going to get into all of the what bad things could happen argument here, too. And this is the argument Stacey and I have all the time. I put a high value on saving lives. And what you fix in this case is not the data. It's how it could be used badly, especially by government. So this is why I keep trying to say, leave the doors open to these good possibilities.
This is fascinating.
It is.
The terms is. China White, methadone, and Avinza, I don't know what Avinza is. Maybe is it a alternative drug, were strongest predictors of heroin-related emergency visits in Boston, Chicago, Denver, Detroit, Minneapolis, New York, Phoenix, San Francisco, and Seattle. That's fascinating. So did we gain anything from Sundar Pichai's testimony in Congress? Did we learn anything?
Just that, and it doesn't necessarily mean much, but we're not going, we have no current plans to go into China with a censored search.
Oh, yes, that's right.
He said that three times, at least.
The evasiveness of the answers was not really,
yes.
I didn't feel encouraged by that.
Right. Now could mean, but tomorrow.
He said right now, there are no plans to launch.
No plans.
But.
And he admitted that there were 100 people.
There were 100 people working on something. Why? If you're not doing it.
Got to be prepared, guys.
Yeah, right. He said, we'll be fully transparent if the company does bring search products to China.
Well, we're going to know it. Yeah.
In a letter to lawmakers last summer, Pichai said providing such a search engine would give broad benefits to China. Well, yeah. Like,
I mean, so my question is really, it is to Google. And I think my question really comes down to, don't you have all of these companies and services in China that are so embedded at this point that, you know, cater to the needs of Chinese users and cater to all the things they want. Why would anybody in China want to use Google, especially a censored version? What would that really what kind of appeal would that have? I don't really see the argument in the first place. It just seems like, wow, Google is really willing to shoot itself in the foot for a buck here. And it doesn't look good.
But they're big bucks, David. I think you're right. To compete with the existing government supported systems, probably not impossible, but a small market share in China could mean a lot of money.
It could mean some, certainly. I mean, it's you know, obviously a huge market. I don't know if it's worth the public backlash. And it's clear Google is getting tremendous backlash on this. And I think it comes from both sides of the aisle, which is the real problem for them. They're not going to find a sympathetic ear on this issue.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Zoe Lofgren, who is Google's member of Congress, right, join in the hunt.
And just to be clear, David, I agree with you. Google should not be doing this. I was glad. I patted them on the back when they left. I couldn't agree more. But in trying to understand the motive, which is really your question, there's a discernible dollar sign or that you can put behind this decision. But I think that I agree the damage would be worse.
I just want to point out that once again, the Monopoly Man was.
Ugh, what a. The mustache got bigger and bigger.
She shows up at every big tech hearing.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it, but I didn't. In all the coverage, I didn't see anything surprising, really, except for the fact that he said we're not doing the China thing. I guess that was maybe the main point of going. And that when you go as a tech executive, you know members of Congress are going to make fools of themselves. So it's amusing.
I honestly wonder what I just think that these are totally useless to the average American, these hearings. They do nothing but confuse the issues at this point. But not going just makes Google look bad. And I think they were responding. Yeah. I think they were responding to the fact that everybody was giving them, you know, a hard time about not going to the last hearing.
Yeah.
And so even though they know it's going to be a farce every single time, it's kind of a no-win situation.
What do you think the general public takes away from this, or if anything, or do they even know about it?
It was way played down in every news site today.
Yeah, it's over, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The nice thing about Trump is that he really dominates the news cycle day after day after day.
Yeah, well, you can call that a nice thing, yeah.
Well, I mean, it is a nice thing for anybody who doesn't want to be
in the news cycle.
In the news cycle. This, you know. Okay. What else? There was a whole bunch of good stuff to talk about. They're looking for Google employees who are leaking. This is an ongoing problem everywhere, but somehow Apple seems to do a good job. They have regular staff meetings about why leaking is bad. According to a former research scientist at Google, the number one priority among senior managers is to stop leaks in the media. Employees
Yeah, that's a bit of an overstatement.
Yeah, I don't think that's their number one priority.
Their number one.
Maybe number two. Yeah. Maybe number three. Employees at the company's headquarters near San Jose are encouraged to monitor their colleagues and list on a web page within Google called Stop Leaks any confidential information they see externally. Of course, anyone caught revealing information to the press is fired. But that's every company.
Yeah, and I mean, at a company like Google, I mean, how many of these people do you think there are super proud to be spying on their coworkers? It doesn't right. feel like Google's the kind of company that would foster that culture.
No, I think it's right.
Except we wouldn't know about the China thing.
Yeah.
We wouldn't. Of course, now Yonatan Zunger is apparently talking to The Intercept because he is one of four sources, the only one named, talking about Google's meetings at the very beginning when they started talking about this China thing. So, I mean, I could see why they don't, especially if they don't plan to do it. I could see why they would might be a little upset about that.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
But the Me Too stuff, you know, was that a leak or was that whistleblowing?
Yeah, right.
I think it was whistleblowing.
That's whistleblowing, right? Yeah.
And
you could argue the search thing is whistleblowing.
You could. It's not legal whistleblowing. It's more like moral whistleblowing,
right.
But yes.
Right.
And the same thing with the drone or the when they were trying to help out with the drones.
Yes.
I mean, and you know, that drone program.
Yes, right. They went public with that.
No, interestingly, David, I was at an event a few weeks ago where I forget who it was that was talking, but just said that decision has really affected the relationship of DOD with Silicon Valley, and that there's a lack of trust now from defense side because there's a belief in the defense people that, you know, this would have been more accurate, would have saved lives, blah blah blah. There was an argument that was there.
Well, and Jeff Bezos.
I'm not coming out, but.
I think Jeff Bezos maybe got some gained some moral ground by saying, "Look, it's our job to help our military, to help the government, to help our country. It's unpatriotic not to
make all whole new kinds of weapons that can be used in new ways and used by bad guys. You know, you want to go to the what bad could happen world. Maybe you just don't want to be in the weapon business."
Yeah, I think so. I think that's, again, for a company with Google's image, I feel like being in the business of weaponizing anything at all is probably just not, I don't think that's something they want to step in.
But they're protecting freedom.
Yeah, I mean, you can argue that, you know, you're saving lives. You know, you're making the drones smarter. You're helping target ID get better.
Google, I don't think Silicon Valley is a pacifist.
No, definitely not.
You're not saying, oh, we shouldn't have a military. We shouldn't have defense. These are intended to be defensive weapons, right?
Yeah, but I just think that specific to Google, I think the message plays very badly. For Google has adopted such a tone and posture on certain issues, I don't think Google could spin that one well.
Yeah.
It's complete dissonance.
Does it hurt Amazon to say, no, we'll do it?
I don't think so. I think Amazon's definitely got that, you know, we take all comers attitude. I mean, they're so focused on commerce and, you know, business is business and it's cutthroat. I think Amazon can totally jive with that.
It's a $10 billion contract.
Yeah.
It's not a small contract.
At some point, you know, you wonder what the core business of Google and Amazon is going to be. In both cases, it may be AI. And if that's your core product and core offering, that's where your core value comes, then passing up government contracts, you know, again, there's a dollar sign you can put that decision.
Reuters, Dateline, Tuesday. Supermicro says, we hired Nardello and Company, a global security firm, to audit our motherboards. They tested samples of old motherboards like the ones sold to Apple and Amazon that Bloomberg said were infected with spy chips and new motherboards. It examined software and design files, found no unauthorized components or signals being sent out. Bloomberg got it wrong, according to Supermicro, and they had an audit to prove it.
This story is super fascinating.
What a
to me.
Shock. I mean, what's going on now? I mean, where is Bloomberg on this? This is time for Bloomberg to step forward and either say, oh, yeah, we got it wrong, or they got some splaining to do.
I mean, I think this is mostly fascinating as kind of an inside baseball thing, just because it's like, who told Bloomberg what and why did they believe it? You know, it's in probably had to tell them many times and probably had to, you know, create some evidence that was basically just completely fake. I mean, I can only imagine. The whole thing is really just, it's totally crazy.
We've been talking about this since the first story. And it's you know, I defended Bloomberg for a long time. I talked to Mark Millian, who works at Bloomberg. He knows the one of the authors. He said he worked right next to him. He's very technical, very smart. He is not somebody who would be fooled. The Bloomberg's editor-in-chief came from The Economist, highly respected. He was involved in over 1 year in the development of this story and presumably putting the authors, to the test. They went with it. They said we had 17 sources.
And they're still sticking by it.
And apparently, this was yesterday that this report came from Supermicro. We haven't heard anything from Bloomberg. Apparently, they're still sticking by it.
I mean, you just have to wonder at this point, how deep does this go? I mean, are we talking like a state level actor kind of story?
It has to be, right?
I know. It's I mean, the intrigue is driving me crazy. I hope eventually we figure it out, but I kind of wonder if we ever will.
At this point, the only thing I can say, first of all, if you take this review as on face value that there, and by the way, I think I do because nobody else has come up with any of these rice kernel size spy chips. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of these boards out there. So I have to think Bloomberg got it wrong. So then the question is, well, how could that happen? And I have to think that that this was a concerted effort on the part of the U.S. intelligence community to mislead Bloomberg.
The scare of the Jesus, right?
And this ties in now to the arrest of the Huawei COO and to the and to the government. Is this part of a trade war against China? Is this,
these days, God knows, it could be.
That's the problem. We just don't know, do we?
No. One question here. So let's say who got a lot of these boards, like Apple.
The Bloomberg story, we talked particularly about a company called Elemental, which makes a streaming device we use. Amazon was in the process of buying Elemental. They have bought them since. And in Amazon's, Bloomberg quoted unnamed sources from Amazon and Apple, but in Amazon's due diligence, they discovered these spy chips on these Elementals. Elementals are used not only by podcasters, but by the Department of Defense, by lots of people to stream video. And the presumption was this was some sort of Chinese spy effort. They didn't necessarily blame Supermicro. The thought was it could have been introduced by a supplier or a manufacturer.
So if you're Elemental or if you're Apple and you do,
Well, Amazon. So yeah. Amazon denied it. Apple denied it. Not only that, right. For the first time in public, demanded a retraction. They said, we've never found such a thing. This didn't happen.
If they did find one, they'd be loath to announce it.
Yeah, but I don't think they would step forward in such a public way.
Yes, I think you're right.
It did not happen.
Yes. Right.
I think at this point, I don't think Bloomberg made it up. So I think they were played. I think that's the only possible.
Oof. Yeah, it's these guys would be that bad to do that. Yeah.
I mean, at this point, I feel like the only avenue for this to really advance is somebody's got to file a defamation lawsuit.
Supermicro says we're considering our legal options.
Can you defame a company?
I guess you would call it, you could probably argue a loss. If there's a loss, if there's going to be a cause of action, I'm sure.
Well, you don't have to have a loss to sue and say you defamed us. You may not get big damages, but you can at least sue. They're not protected by the First Amendment if they knowingly lied.
Right.
They are protected by the First Amendment if they didn't do it with intent, right? I'm not an expert on the First Amendment.
But I feel like the point of a suit wouldn't be any kind of monetary gain.
No, it would be to get
Bloomberg
to, say, yeah.
to give up the goods.
Yeah, yeah. Discovery, yeah. What protections do they have, Jeff?
So I was looking up here on the God blessed Google, which knows where I am, and I'm fine with that. See, I searched, and it didn't give me German law. It gave me American law, because it knows where I am, and I'm not harmed. It's okay. Calm down. Anyway, it says that a company can be defamed, though only small corporations can sue for defamation.
Big corporations companies like, can't?
Companies like people have reputations that can be damaged. However, though companies can claim damages for loss of reputation, they can get nothing for injury to feelings.
Yes, but I understand that. But they at least could get them to say, that's wrong. Oh, we didn't, you know, or whatever. I mean, it would have been an amazing...
Small corporations are those which employ fewer than 10 people.
Oh, that's not that small.
Which are not related to any other corporation. For the purpose of kind of why is that?
I don't know. I guess, I mean, probably the cause of action then would be something like tortious interference, you know, or one of these companies could just claim, hey, you interfered with my business. Yeah. You know, I can demonstrate a loss, you know, and I'm sure they can. I'm sure they had calls and emails from tons and tons of companies and people that they work with deeply concerned about that.
Well, we'll see.
I had no idea.
There was a loss. Supermicro's stock plummeted after this story.
Yeah.
And by the way, to people who don't like Bloomberg, they say that was the reason. Because Bloomberg reporters, we've been told, get paid based on moving the market.
What?
I know. I don't. That's what I said. Don't believe that. What?
I don't believe that.
I don't believe that either. No. I'd have to think the SEC would be moral deeply hazard. Concerned about that.
Here it is from Business Insider. Bloomberg News pays reporters more if their stories move markets. It's one of many metrics factored into reporters' annual bonuses. This is from 2013. Mm-hmm. We asked Bloomberg back the practice. A company spokesperson acknowledged it. It isn't news unless it's true. At Bloomberg News, the most important news is actionable. That means we strive to be first to report surprises in markets that change behavior. And we put a premium on reporting that reveals the biggest changes in relative value across all assets. You know, you could say, well, there was a definite, you know, bonus in the picture if they could harm Supermicro.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't want to impugn the motives or the integrity of these two reporters. For everything I know, they're good reporters. They're not still.
It is a mysterious story.
I want to know more. We want to know more. And I think if you're Supermicro, you might have good reason to be pretty darn angry. But I'd like to, you know what? Bloomberg, call us. We'll put you on. I'd like to hear your story. I'd like to hear your side of it.
So you brought up the Huawei story.
Yeah, let's do. We'll tie this into the Huawei story. So. By the way, as Karsten said, is Meng on the way to Inuit, on the road to Inuit? She's been bailed out, right?
Yes.
Nunavut.
Yes.
Nunavut. It's the new Bob Hope Bing Crosby movie, The Road to Nunavut. Imagine that she will then be exfiltrated from Canada so that she doesn't have to stand trial in the United States.
She's supposed to stay in her home.
Are they surrounding it?
I doubt it. I don't think, I mean, Canada can't be too pleased to be in the middle of this because a former Canadian diplomat's now arrested in China.
Yep. Immediately, a Canadian diplomat arrested in China. And if you're an American business person, I wouldn't be going to China anytime soon.
And so then Trump's saying he may intervene. Now the problem is that any country out there says, oh, we got a negotiation going on. Let's arrest ourselves a few executives.
So Meng Wanzhou is the CFO of Huawei. She's been accused by a U.S. Department of Justice and was arrested in Canada at the behest of the DOJ for creating a shell corporation to bypass Iranian sanctions.
So let's stop there for 1 second. How many companies are doing that these days?
Well, that's a question.
How many international companies?
It is illegal if they're doing it. I mean,
it's illegal under not under Chinese law. It's, you know, we make it illegal.
It's our sanctions, right?
It's our sanctions. So is that, you know, for us to step in and arrest someone from another country in another country because they're violating our law?
They sold HP gear to Iran through this shell company, which they claimed was not part of Huawei, but in fact all the employees had Huawei badges and were getting checks from Huawei. So,
but I just wonder how common it is, and why did I'm presuming it's fairly common. I mean, not common. But I'm presuming they're not the only company in the world to do it. And why would they pick on Huawei?
Right. And of course, there's political been a drumbeat. Chip. There's been a drumbeat for years. Yeah. Don't use Huawei gear in your 5G networks. Don't buy Huawei phones. Don't buy Huawei technology, because their founder was in the Chinese military, and it's presumed that there is a connection between the Chinese.
And by the way, I don't trust Huawei myself either.
Yeah.
But in this house of cards, God knows who's on the right.
It really, this is the problem. If I don't know what to say anymore.
I know.
I just don't know. I just don't know. But that's the point. Well, isn't that the goal of all of this? Is just to confuse the hell out of everybody so nobody knows what's going on.
I mean, this is what ZTE got in so much trouble for. Yes. It is the same basic crime that they're accusing Huawei of here. Right. Well, granted, I think Huawei, it just seems so much less – it seems a little more fishy, A, because of the timing and political situation, and B, because Huawei's business presence in the United States is microscopic. Yes. You know, they sell some laptops here. That's – yeah. And so I think that's why it feels a little more
political. They are the number two smartphone manufacturer in the world, though, after Samsung. And they're the number one manufacturer of 5G gear. And I think that that's why all of this is going on right now, because as all of the nations of the world and all the telecommunications companies of the world ramp up to 5G, they're buying a lot of Huawei gear. Canada says we're ripping out our Huawei gear at a cost of over $1 billion.
Jeez.
Wow.
And if the fear, of course, is that the Huawei gear is used either to spy for industrial espionage or for cyber warfare, that they'll have a kill switch they can flip and take all the networks off the air as an act of war.
And not just business espionage, but like the now the Marriott hack is being attributed to the Chinese.
And I don't know if I trust that. Who's saying that?
I know.
This sounds like more...
House of mirrors, house of cards.
It's a house of mirrors. I don't know what to believe. I mean, it's completely credible that it's a Chinese operation. It's a nation state that hacked Marriott. Apparently, according to the accusation, they were doing this to, and this is in the New York Times article, that they were doing this. They were also hacking insurance companies and others. And this was part of a concerted effort of the Ministry of State Security, China's communist-controlled civilian spy agency. But it's related to the trade war going on. I'd like to know who is saying that it was the Chinese. Is this the White House? Is this the CIA? This is where it just gets crazy.
Now, by the way, can I do a separate rant here?
Yeah.
For a minute. And if I've done this before, the show stop me. I say that to my students all the time. If I did this before, stop me. Jarvis is repeating himself. Can we not presume that, let's just talk about our dear country, that every single American has had their name, address, age, probably social security number, and a credit card number or two breached.
Yeah. You can find out. Go to haveibeenpwned.com. And you'll
everybody
be,
has. Everybody. Right? Has, yeah. So what that means is, and yet we're still trying to fix the dike after all the water is out.
Yeah.
And what we should be doing is trying to change the transactional infrastructure such that all that information is useless. You can't do anything bad with it. I don't want to say, am I going to say this? So some bozo has more than once used my name to get cable service in an entirely another city.
Really?
And the damn cable company. Oh yeah. The damn cable company, three of them didn't check credit.
Aye.
And so I've got to go to the police tomorrow to file another report and say it was fraudulent, blah, 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 blah. Right. And, because the problem is that the companies didn't do their job.
Right.
So it's easy. We've always made it too easy to defraud companies because their rate of loss is small. Oh, what the hell? They'll write off some stuff. They'll collect some stuff. Okay, fine. But that means that the data should not be enticing. If we fixed the structure, data breaches for these issues wouldn't be an issue. Now, there could be for other issues.
Right.
But at a broad scale, it just wouldn't be. That's what we've got to fix. And there's zero talk about that. What do we have an FTC for? How do we protect the consumers? And we've got to make data breaches meaningless.
Companies have to do a better job. That's really clearly true. And the only way they're going to do that is if it costs them more not to.
But we're nowhere near doing that. Nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, we have an entire society that's got insurance built upon the notion that these things are going to happen.
Right.
And so when losses are incurred, everybody gets their stuff back.
Yep.
So does the insurance company fight for this? Do they go to the Congress and say change the laws?
It's got to cost somebody something. No, yeah. You know what? The unpleasant cost is you because you're the one who has to waste time going to the police.
Yeah. Oh, and, exactly. And what it really makes me feel bad is wasting the police's time.
Yeah.
I live in a town where they're not doing much. But
Lily Hay Newman today in Wired, and she's good. She's your security porter. If China hacked Marriott, if 2014 marked a full-on assault, she says, if that was China involved in the 2014 hack of the Marriott, because that's when it happened, by the way, that would make it just one of several devastating, roughly concurrent cyber attacks against the United States. The same year, Chinese actors pilfered extremely sensitive and expansive data on tens of millions of U.S. citizens. Remember this? From the Office of Personnel Management, China. In February 2014, Anthem was hacked, China. Names, birth dates, addresses, social security numbers, even income data. Throughout 2015, analysts noticed the intelligence value to China of gathering in-depth information on so many people from multiple sources. The diversity, this is why, by the way, this is the motive. The diversity of data could allow Chinese espionage agents to check and cross-reference information and track individuals over time. If I were this is Crane Hasselt, Senior Director of Threat Research at Agari. It's a phishing defense firm. Used to work as a digital behavior analyst for the FBI. If I were a foreign intelligence service, by the way, good use of the subjunctive tense, Crane, and wanted to get a complete picture about a specific group of people, these are exactly the targets I would select. OPM contained comprehensive data on government employees. Anthem contained detailed personal information. Marriott contained travel records. From a foreign intelligence perspective, it would be very useful. That kind of makes sense.
I see what they're saying. They get the huge bucket, but they've already got a list they're looking for.
Yeah, they're looking for the U.S. agents
building a map.
Yep.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay.
So in fact, they're not. In fact, that's the best possible outcome for you and me, unless you're a Chinese agent, David. I don't know. Or a CIA agent, but it's bet for a normal person, they don't care, right? They don't.
Well, unless they're finding a revenue stream and reselling it.
Well,
the Russians would do that.
Right.
Yeah.
The U.S. and China had agreed to a landmark digital truce in 2015. We didn't report on that. I wish we had. That banned digital assaults on private companies to steal trade secrets. The detente seemed successful for a while, writes Hay Newman. But over the last 18 months, China has gradually eroded the agreement, pushing its boundaries and ramping up hacking efforts in areas outside the deal's scope. So these are old hacks going back 4 years, 3 or 4 years. They agreed to stop doing that, but they're finding other avenues. Even then, less hacking doesn't mean no hacking. All the data that we had certainly indicated a decrease in activity, but decrease does not mean it went to zero. J. Michael Daniel, White House cybersecurity coordinator during the Obama administration. Wow. So maybe it is a true story. Maybe we're just having a delayed reaction to bad acting on China's part all along. I don't know.
Well, I think we're just getting this influx of this news this week because of the news that the administration wants to announce all these crackdowns on China.
Right.
And so, you know, they're building the case.
Boy, I just feel manipulated. I really do.
Don't we all?
And we don't know who's manipulating, who's pulling the strings.
Nope.
All right, I'm going to take a break. We'll come back. I want to play the video. It's official now. YouTube Rewind 2018, now the number two most hated video on YouTube.
Let's make it number one.
Let's make it number one. You can all help right after this. Our show today brought to you by Cashfly. And literally, quite literally, when you go to twit.tv, our website, and you watch a show, when you download the podcast, you're getting it from Cashfly. It's our content delivery network, our CDN. Make this the last month your CDN gives you a headache with Cashfly. You know, every second your site's down means money being lost on your watch. And it's even worse if you can't predict CDN costs because of unpredictable usage bills. We'd be like that. We've been on Cashfly for more than 10 years. And our downloads are very spiky and very unpredictable. If I had to log into Cashfly every minute to see, oh, is it going to go over the limit this month? I wouldn't have time to do anything else. Fortunately, I don't have to, because Cashfly works with you to create a custom plan tailored to your needs based on yearly usage trends. And boy, do we save. On average, customers who switch to Cashfly save more than 20%. And have I ever had a CDN outage in 10 years? No. No 3A. Have we? No. Never had a 3A. We've screwed things up, but that's not Cashfly. No 3 a.m. calls from Cashfly. I'm not the only one. Ars Technica's director of technology says, sometimes we have spike events generating 15 to 16 million page views. With Cashfly, you don't see an issue. The CDN just absorbs it. Our customers commend us on that. I like it that no one's ever complained to me that they can't get our podcast from Cashfly. It's always there. It's always fast. If the podcast loads fast for you, thank Cashfly. And if you have content you deliver to customers, whether you're a podcast network or you have video or maybe you're doing software as a service, a game developer, call Cashfly. Actually, go to twit.cashfly.com. Twit.cashfly.com, CACHEFLY.com, to get up to $5,000 in CDN service credits when you sign up by December 20th and migrate by next year. Twit.cashfly.com. You hear me say it at the beginning of every show for the last 10 years. Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cashfly at CACHEFLY.com. Thank you, Cashfly.
Thank you, Cashfly.
Yes, it's Matt Levine. He's a great guy, founder of Cashfly. He came to us way back when and said, you know, we should help. We could help. Because do you remember that, John? In the beginning, we were using BitTorrent and stuff to get the show to people.
Oh, God.
It was crazy. We'd say, okay, who wants to seed the episode this week? All right. Let me just see what YouTube does this every year. They call it the Rewind. And it is kind of like the highlights of the year, right, on YouTube.
Highly stylized.
Yeah.
It promotes their stars overproduced way. It always has done that, yes.
116 million views in less than a week. But this is the number that's interesting. 9.4 million thumbs down, making it, I think, only second to what is it, Baby? The Justin Bieber hit? I don't know that, but see, that just, it's spite. It's not that they don't like it, right? I don't know. Let's watch. Here's somebody standing looking over what looks like the Grand Canyon. Who is it? Will Smith.
Yeah, it's Rewind time. You know, if I control Rewind, I would want Marquez Brownlee.
Oh, Marquez Brownlee, name checked by the famous Will Smith. There's Marquez.
Is this what you wanted? Bus.
You know who I would have asked for?
I don't know who she is.
Quit horsing around.
Or him.
Play me some of that jumping music.
Okay. You said jumping music?
Jumping music.
These are all YouTube stars, right?
We don't know any of them. I guess. We're too old.
Allegedly.
At the end, there are credits.
Oh, it's a Fortnite bus. I get it. They're all jumping out of the Fortnite bus. I get it.
Not even a thank you?
Will Smith bungeed into the Grand Canyon live on YouTube?
Is this Marcus? Quiero a Liza.
I guess they're showing off the international angle, right?
Yes.
So, guys, apparently
now we're in Survivor Land.
Rewind this year.
y'all, we can do whatever we want.
Who does this appeal to? Henry, you're 25 now? How old are you now? 24. That's my son, Henry. Yeah, Dad knows. Do you, okay, I recognize Casey Neistat. Do you know who these people are? Well, I know they're mostly YouTubers. Ninja, okay, so he's a Fortnite player. He was the guy driving the bus. Yeah, I should have recognized the hair. That was Ninja. KC, I recognize. Tell me who else these are. Come on, Henry. This is for you. This is for you. Or are you too old? Is it for 8? Is it for 12-year-olds? Who is this for?
Rewind needs more science.
Oh, I know who that is. That's the guy with the beard.
Love that. Melting lipstick.
That's the guy explains everything. He's the guy who ruins everything, right? Or no?
Right.
That's not him? She's some makeup YouTuber, right? He's a science guy. They're in, it looks like they're in China or Japan. I don't know.
Gallup, what do you want?
Eating food, funny hairstyle, dogs, cakes. Dogs eating cakes. Turkeys, people in tuxedos, champagne.
Marshmallow needs to be in this video.
That was, yeah, Will Smith at the beginning. He recognized Will Smith. There's Marshmallow, who played with Ninja in the Fortnite celebrity match. I remember that. Some cowboys ice skating for reasons no one fully understands. Okay, I'm going to give this a thumbs down. Bongo Cat.
Production. I mean, this even they for a YouTube
How
thing.
Much do they spend on this?
This spent a lot of money to go around and get people to.
But, you know.
Guys, let's do the In My Feelings Challenge. Right?
This is not for us, I realize. This is for YouTube creators. Because this is that you'll go, oh, I can't wait. I got to be in the next remix. Like, this is a reward for working on Google's farm. Right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, now he's, what's that called? Crumping? What's John Oliver, Never Trevor Noah? Ninja, right? Pink hair, blue hair, whatever. Okay. Cartoons.
What's the beast there?
What's that tarantula all about?
That is Lucas the Spider.
Thank you.
You know who really needs to be?
You know that because you have Carson a young that? Kid. That's because of your kid, right?
Who
found a way
Spider
to help
awesome.
The causes that matter to the most.
There's a kitty cat.
Everyone who proved it's okay to talk about mental health this year and showing their viewers that it's okay to go through
And now the serious like moment.
It takes
serious
a moment. Lot of bravery to be that vulnerable, and I'm so proud of this community.
I think this year's Rewind should celebrate the fierce, fabulous, and empowering art of drag.
I want to see all of you be your own kind of beautiful.
And those people who have raised money in the field
of education.
Can we also give a moment to Asian representation in entertainment this year? Major strides were made.
And to the people who put aside their differences.
Yeah, and created something really special.
Here's to all women in 2018 finding their voices.
Foi muito bacana ver como as mulheres cresceram esse ano. Elas ganharam poder.
Can we give a moment to working
moms? This really a biggest international focus they've ever had on this.
Yes. Aprendeu alguma coisa nesse ano.
I want to thank the whole community that always supports us.
We are family. We are a team. Family is everything.
I want to give a moment to everyone who supported me when I got sick. All
we know who
the
this is.
Messages I got made me feel like I wasn't alone.
Somebody who got sick, but she's better now.
We're forgetting something.
Was she? Famous because she got sick or famous
I
before
she... famous because she makes awesome
we should read the comments.
Robots, and
she makes awesome crappy robots.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then she got sick.
Oh, is that... What's her name? Oh.
That's what's her name. That's almost entirely the reaction of everybody over 15. Oh, that's... What's her name? Outfits and Rewind. Put the I love it in... There's
okay,
like,
I get this reference.
What is it?
It's a reference to a music video.
Okay. Soccer, or football as it's known. Starman, but not Elon, just some other people. Also, and not a Tesla, a Cadillac.
No.
ASMR, oh no. A tribute to ASMR. And I wouldn't have expected that. Fortnite. Is this like Are archaeologists going to look at this in 1,000 years and
say, WTF?
Parse it out bit by bit. There'll be PhD theses written on what it all meant. The foil ball challenge. I know that. It almost makes me feel like the world has just gotten too weird.
No. Okay. Hold on here.
All right. Hold
Ramps,
on.
Get off my yard.
Hold on here.
No.
Foil ball challenge.
So you hear about in Congress today, all you hear about from YouTube and social media is, oh, there's this one horrible video where Hillary Clinton drinks blood. Oh, my God. The world's falling apart. Everything in this video makes somebody happy.
That's right.
Somebody.
That's
right?
A good
Everything
point.
Everything in there.
Everything
and,
in there.
And it's some good numbers, and people find each other, and they care, and they enjoy, and that's what the internet really is, and it still is. It's not ruined, people. Calm down. It's okay.
Okay, Jeff.
I still really, like, I struggle to understand the immense dislike ratio on it. It's not something I would enjoy, but I think it's, I don't know. I think
it's like nominating Hank the Angry Drunken Dwarf to be the sexiest man alive in people, right? It's now become a hoot to hate it. That's all.
Yeah, I think maybe.
It's a meme.
No PewDiePie in this.
Yeah, that's what I think that's probably a big chunk of those numbers.
Those people are people voting it down for PewDiePie.
Yeah.
Now yeah, the internet's, you know.
Yes. YouTube is such a massive throng of people, and so many people with something to say on it have something awful to say. It's really the problem. Meanwhile, there are the vast majority of people who are perfectly fine to consume it and not say anything. And therein, I think, still lies the problem. Pressing that dislike button is a lot more appealing than pressing the like button.
Henry, most of your media is YouTube, right?
Yeah.
Almost everything, right? You go home, you watch YouTube, you want to learn how to do something, you watch YouTube.
Yeah, that's more so.
Yeah. You learned how to cook really well watching YouTube videos.
Thank you.
Ooh.
Have you ever made a foil ball?
A what?
Never mind. All right, Jeff, I'm going to give you that. I am going to vote thumbs up.
Makes people happy. Now, are you going to keep playing it or yeah?
Should I? You want some more?
Well, because you're almost at the end where they have the credits in essence.
Oh, all the
each
names.
Each one being a link.
Oh, okay.
So we
I do like it that it is the international scope of it.
Love that.
Because that's more honest about what's going on. I don't know why there's not more Bob Ross, but here's Will Smith again. So he bungeed off.
Oh, that's hot. That's hot.
Oh, no. Is this going to trigger me?
I don't know. Here's Will Smith, Marques Brownlee. It's fun. Sophia Castro, Eliza Kashi, Dottie TV, By the Ska. Enjoy Phoenix, The Kate Clap, Casey Neistat, Merrill Twins, Bear Hug. Wow, all these people. That's good. So you know who everybody is.
Have you ever watched this guy's stuff? What is it called? Primitive Technology?
Yeah, this is kind of an amazing YouTube video.
It's unbelievable.
It's good. And when the world falls apart and we're reduced to living in caves,
we'll know how to make a house.
We won't be able to watch the video. Yeah. We'll hope we did once.
Yeah. No, this... What I do like about this is the kind of media, this is creative that you would have never seen this on mainstream media, probably. I mean, now you will. But YouTube gave scope to somebody with a crazy idea that turned out to be really good. He just made a YouTube play button.
That's pretty
cool. Out of mud.
I want that.
Or it's actually a rewind button, isn't it? That's kind of a nice shout out to that. What's the name of that channel?
I want to say it's Primitive Technology, Ancient Tech. Yeah. I think it's something like that.
Yeah.
His videos are totally wild.
Here's a
review.
Here's Welcome PewDiePie's response.
To where I complain about YouTube Rewind.
Oh, no.
Our yearly edition, 2018. Last year.
When is this guy's 15 minutes going to be over?
Oh, God.
You know, as long as you know, white male gamers are insufferable, he'll still be a thing. And I think that's going to be a long time, unfortunately. It's he really has the worst audience.
I think there's another way to put it, which is as long as white men are still allowed to be insufferable, they'll be big, and that's going to be forever.
Yeah.
You're going to have an army after you, says my son. 18 million views on PewDiePie's response to YouTube Rewind. Roughly twice the number of thumbs down. I wonder how many thumbs down PewDiePie got, actually. Let me go look at that.
Year review. Welcome, everybody.
He got 53,000 thumbs down, but 1.6 million thumbs up.
If you're watching him, you're drinking the Kool-Aid already. It's not really. Yeah. People aren't going to come en masse to be mad at PewDiePie.
So YouTube's official blog, kind of a prose version of the Rewind. In 2018, you danced your heart out to Drake, yodeled in Walmart, played a lot of Fortnite. It's funny that YouTube's getting a lot of credit for Fortnite when it really had nothing to do with Fortnite, right?
Which is also kind of funny given the massive spat between Google and Epic.
Right.
They're really not on good terms.
Actually, that's a good point. Epic intentionally didn't put Fortnite on the Play Store.
Yeah.
So they
That's right. So why would they?
And YouTube's like, well, that's what you guys are talking about. This year
it's a
was
separate
marked,
company.
It's Is it? But is it really? Is it? This year was marked by surprising celebrity moments. In February, Kylie Jenner surprised the world with 2-hour daughter, an 11-minute film detailing her pregnancy and the birth of baby Storm. Oh, man. That's what's wrong with YouTube right there. You can't say that's a good thing. 53 million views. Number one top trending video of 2018. Will Smith vlogged all over the world. He jumped out of a helicopter over the Grand Canyon on a dare. Rihanna started her own Tutorial Tuesday's makeup series. And, of course, so what this is all about is the big-name celebrities, the A-listers, saying, man, we better check out this YouTube thing. Rihanna said, well, I got to do makeup tutorials.
Well, they've tapped out the money on Instagram. It's time for a new medium.
Emerging and well-known YouTube stars showed up in a big way in the year's top trending videos list. Liza and David shared the news of their breakup through tears and laughs. Okay, I've had enough. I can't read any more of this. Let's do the Google change log. Oh, my God.
The Google change log.
God, it's like Karsten has his finger right over that button.
He's learned
the entire show.
I tried to surprise him, but I couldn't do it.
You can't. Karsten is wonder producer.
Wonder producer. We should make a Twit Rewind video with Karsten in it.
He rips off his bow tie and underneath there it says WP.
He could bungee off the roof.
Please don't.
Alpha Zero. This is actually an amazing story. Alpha Zero is the self-learning AI that taught itself from scratch without being given anything but the rules how to become a master at chess, shogi, which is Japanese chess, and go, beating the world champion program in each case. It literally became the best AI by teaching itself.
Oh, no. We have no more games left. The machines have taken them over.
That's kind of an amazing story. There's a book coming out by chess grandmaster Matthew Sadler and Women's International Master Natasha Regan, who analyzed AlphaGo's chess games for a book about AlphaGo called Game Changer. What they say is interesting. They say AlphaGo's style is unlike any traditional chess engine. It's like discovering the secret notebooks of some great player from the past. That's what happens when instead of training, like as they did with Deep Blue, training on games, they let the AI play, they teach it the rules only and let it play a billion games and learn the rules itself. That's fascinating, I think. Google News, collaborating on the future of audio news for the Google Assistant. This one gives me chills, and it's by Liz Gaines, who we all know, and she's been on Twit many times. What I didn't know is she's now the product manager for news at Google. So that's why we haven't had her on Twit in a while. Now I understand. For the past century, radio has been a one. She was at, what was that podcast startup?
80DB, I think it was.
Yeah, and then did Google buy them? Is that why she's now at Google?
No, they just went out of business.
They just went out of business, okay.
50DB. I don't know. Six. Some
something like that.
DB.
Some number of DB.com. That was, by the way, that's probably why they went out of business. Was it 65? Is it 48? What is it? For the past century, radio has been a one-size-fits-all medium. Thank you very much. Not true. Turn on the radio. You're dropped into a show in a moment of time, regardless of what you already know, where you are, what you're interested in. I'm insulted, Liz. Imagine if you could have your own radio. Oh, you mean podcasts? For the past year, we've worked with publishers from around the world, including the Associated Press, Hollywood Reporter, Universo Online, and the South China Morning Post to link through the future of audio news, to think through the future of audio news, a prototype that brings the artificial intelligence of Google News to the voice contact of the assistant context. This sounds like a bad idea. Anyway.
Yeah, I was trying to read about it, and I really didn't quite get it. It sounds like basically your daily briefing, which is already a Google feature, but right. Completely audio news focused, and that's
Well, let's see what happens here. I'm going to play.
Hey, Google, play the news.
Let's get started with your morning news update. First up is KQED.
That's the
This is the California
public
Report.
Radio
I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm John Sepulveda.
We're going to head to space now. I love when we do this. Ugh. The Mars InSight has touched
I don't know how this is different from radio. This is actually radio.
It's already beamed back a photo since its arrival yesterday.
I mean, literally.
When NASA's InSight mission to Mars took off
itself,
from the Central Coast Vandenberg Air Force Base 6 months
we're
ago,
we're going to head to space
two
now.
Little satellites I love piggybacked along for the ride.
They it's said this sequences were shortened and simulated, but not short enough, apparently.
They just made history.
Next, I'm ready to change a report the channel. From the AP. Yeah. Kevin Durant poured in a season-high 49 points as the
now,
Warriors
this,
came back down 18 to beat the Magic.
This is interesting. Hey, Google, is that a real voice?
Next story.
Here's KCBS.
Well, this is
Whether
another
Whether it's
radio
a hotel,
station.
Motel, or vacation rental, all those little hair care products and lotions in plastic bottles will be banned
okay,
in Santa Cruz.
Okay, thank you. 'Tis the holiday season. Keep calm and I'm moving on. I don't. And Google Fit on, Google Fit has been redesigned around new activity goals from the American Heart Association and World Health Organization physical activity recommendations. So, I don't know if you've not looked at
they
Google
Fit
lately.
They know what you've been doing.
Yes. And where you're doing it.
It's got a widget. That's what this breaks down to.
Hey.
Oh. Okay.
Is it me or did they take away the Google News widget?
Google's been taking away widgets for years,
What's
which when
wrong
I saw this,
with
I was
them?
Like, why are they putting a widget in an app? I thought widgets were basically dead.
Prominently featured on my Pixel because I use it. The Google News widget, it disappeared one day, just a couple of days ago. It's gone. There's no more widget.
There isn't a new, because they changed Google News entirely. Is there a new one?
This is the new Google News widget that was news for you, and it had my stories, and the top five stories, all that. I use it as a widget.
I don't know. I see it. It's still
you
there.
You still see it? It's gone on my phone.
See, moral panic.
It says David's briefing.
Yeah, you got that still as a widget?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I have an update to the news app or anything.
Go get your updates, baby. It'll be disappearing. It's gone on mine. Unless they change the name to something else. I can't find it. I was very disappointed. Anyway, so now we have a widget for Fit. Take a deep breath, relax, and unwind. Oh, it's telling. See, it knows. It knows that.
It's telling what you do. It's Leo. Changing. Take a deep breath. Breathe now, Leo.
The For You tab comes to iOS in over 130 countries on Android. Huh? It's in Google Maps. There's now a For You tab, just like there is in Google News.
Google Maps is probably the most overstuffed product Google distributes.
I just want a map, and the map is this big. And the rest of the crap is this big.
Yeah.
I just want a map.
You're at the airport. Would you like to try this hot new Thai place?
No.
It's like,
no. Explore. I don't want to explore Petaluma. I just want to know where the hell I am.
Though I do use it when I'm in a city, I go, I turn the map on, and then I go to the explore around me to find a restaurant. I find it very
I do use it sometimes. Yeah. It can be good. Sometimes it can be real bad. I think it really
yes,
depends
no,
on
right,
what you're looking for.
Well, so, you know, and soon, you know, up in the list is Taco Bell, which I actually like being there, but it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it is. It is ridiculous.
But that's why I use Waze whenever possible, except when I walk.
Waze is all about
By the way, oh, I forgot to report this news on the show. So remember I was doing my car hunt for like 5 years?
Yes.
And one of my requirements was to have Android Auto, and I finally gave up.
Yeah.
And I got a Mazda CX-5, which I like very much, and they announced a retrofit. And it cost me an effing fortune Could be $400.
Wow.
But I got it.
Nice.
And so
I have a Miata and I'm thinking about getting it too, but it is $400.
$400. It's $200 for the hardware because they got to replace the things, and it's $200 labor. But I did it, and so I get Android Auto at last, right? So then I discover, and this story will end with Jarvis being stupid. So I'm using it, and I'm listening to a book, and I've got my Waze. I'm happy. I'm cruising along. Well, now I don't want to listen to Waze. I want to know the book. I want to listen to MSNBC on Sirius. So I can't figure out how to get Sirius unless I get it off my phone, where I'll be spending a fortune.
Yeah.
And I can't get the radio. How can you not listen to the radio? So finally, I did figure out that once the map is up, if I hit my favorites, I can go to MSNBC. It's fine. And then I hit back and go in, but it's kludgy. The screen, I can't tell if I want to hit a button. I can't tell where it is. I cannot get the turn-by-turn directions to save my soul. Only the map. And so I can't tell, well, how's it rooting me? I don't know. So it ain't perfect. But I figure I'll get updates. And because the updates are coming automatically to Android Auto. And it's pretty cool. I think being a god of Android, sir, I think you might be kind of have to do it. So you can help me when I get wrong.
I've used it. Android Auto is unfortunately a product that I think has gotten worse over time.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, I think you may be right.
The performance is really terrible from what I've heard lately.
David, didn't it used to be that it would basically brick your phone so you can't do anything. You're driving.
Yeah, now, it did do that.
But it doesn't do that anymore. So now I can, at a stoplight, hit the thing and see if I got a message. Or do something else. So at least it's not as nanny-ish as it used to be.
As long as I can play Pokemon Go while I'm heading down the freeway, I don't care. Except Pokemon Go always says, you're going too fast. Are you a passenger? Yeah, I'm not driving. So as soon as we talk about Google Hangouts, lo and behold, Google Hangouts chat gets smart reply. Oh, this is Hangouts chat. Not Hangouts, Hangouts chat. And, oh, guess who it's for? You, Jeff, G Suite users. It's rolling out to G Suite users within the next few days. So this is chat. Android police guy, you got to explain to me. Please. So there's Hangouts, there's Hangouts chat, and there's Hangouts meet.
Yeah.
Chat meet or first G Suite. Right?
Yeah. So chat is supposed to be this intra-organizational communication platform. It's like basically Slack.
Okay.
It's Slack. It's Slack, but with more of the kind of Hangouts legacy attached to
it's
because
ugly,
it's
ugly
works
Slack.
In yes, it is ugly Slack. I think that's a good way to put it. Yeah. And with a more of a focus on one-to-one communication, I think, than Slack has. But and then Hangouts Meet is just basically, as far as I understand it, they're taking a lot of the old Hangouts on Air platform. The cloud meeting platform, and they're doing something with that. I've not used Hangouts.
They're doing something with it.
They're doing something with it.
They're doing something with it.
Doesn't matter. They're going to kill it anyway.
That's the thing about Google products, though. Somebody's actually pointing this out to me is, hey, if you look at Allo, a lot of what made Allo kind of neat, is we've been kind of hooked into Android messages now. And, so when something at Google dies, usually it kind of lives on with features in other products. And so I think that you kind of have to follow the path. And I think Hangouts Meet is, kind of from where the original Hangouts like voice or the video product started, and Hangouts Chat is kind of Allo meets regular Hangouts meets, I don't know, Slack or something. So a lot of the stuff does live on. It's just I've never used either of these platforms because they're enterprise only. Right. And it's hard to keep track.
So if you use Google Translate, you probably didn't even know this because gender bias is so built in. But if you translated a sentence that said from Turkish, "Obir doktor," it would come out, "He is a doctor." There was a bias. If you used words like strong and doctor, you'd get a masculine skew, or feminine or nurse or beautiful, you'd get a feminine skew. They're going to fix that, which is good. So now if you translate Obi or doctor, you'll get two translations. She is a doctor or he is a doctor. Thank you. The reason I bring this up, though, is it shows how easily these human biases get translated into machine learning. We think, well, it's machine learning. It's not biased. It's a machine. But it is, because it's biased, because it's trained by biased. And it biased, the problem with bias is often it's unseen, unheard, and unknown. So it's actually a difficult thing to root out. We're going to get Amy Webb on a triangulation soon. She's got a brand new book all about this. She's our futurist. And she's been on, I think she's been on the show. She's certainly been on Twit a number of times. And her new book is The Big Nine, How Tech Titans and Their Thinking Machines Will Change Humanity. That comes out March 5th. But I am proud to say, a pre-release version. Let's see, what else is in the change log?
All right, we're still in it. Oh
my God, it's endless.
Poor Carson has his hand over the next button.
Yeah, he's been hovering there all day.
It's going to sleep.
Top trending. I love this, actually. The year in search. Every year Google does this. This is better than the rewind, if you ask me.
It takes a few seconds, so I'll switch this one on. And we'll just say, Mommy Talks.
Alex. Alex. Alex.
So it looks like a cochlear implant, a baby that's never heard before hearing his mother's voice for
this
the first time.
This is a miracle rescue. That all 13 members of the soccer team are out of the cave.
He turns into a superhero set on feeding as many homeless people as possible.
This is so cute.
This election, we've seen historic.
I always like this video.
Yeah. All Asian cast.
See, once again, mankind is not ruined.
When Google does the feel-good stuff, I always like it. Their ads are always good this way. How to be a good singer.
Oh, that lady was great.
How to be a good dancer.
New dance in the outfield.
Fortnite really gets a lot of credit for teaching people to dance. How to be a good kisser. How to be a good listener.
Saying the word Yanni.
What makes a good role model? Stephen Hawking, John McCain, George Bush.
Kids have the dream. They just want to know that someone cares.
We got love for you. It's only right. We got to stay together.
Wow. What makes a good friend? Drum circles. What makes a good teacher? Learn how to... What's that called? Dabbing? What is that dance?
Flossing.
Flossing. Okay. I'm obviously a year or two behind.
Welcome to the show, Chloe Kim.
The Olympics. Oh, there Jesus. He goes. That was Will Smith bunging out of an airplane.
Life is good. The world is filled with people doing the best they can, you know, who love their kids and would like to live their lives with a little dignity and hope, just like everybody else.
Good things are worth searching for. It's just an ad for Google, really, but
but it's a good one.
It's kind of fun to see the year number one search in the United States: World Cup. World Cup, number one person search, Demi Lovato, Meghan Markle, Brett Kavanaugh, Logan Paul, Khloe Kardashian. Oh, dear. Oh, dear.
Can't you already find her?
Yes. Why are you searching for her? I like this. Number one beauty question, how to apply magnetic lashes. I did, in fact, search for that. Diets, keto, Dubro, Noom, carnivore, and Mediterranean in order. GIFs, Fortnite default dance, Dilly Dilly,
GIF.
Orange. I'm sorry, did I say GIF?
Yes, you did.
GIFs, Fortnite default dance, Dilly Dilly, Orange Justice, and Black Panther. How to vote, how to register to vote, yes. How to play Mega Millions, no. How to buy Ripple. What?
What?
Oh, that's a Bitcoin. That's or a coin, cryptocurrency.
Oh, right, okay. That was a cheap wine.
See, yeah, Jeff and I grew up in an era where Ripple was a fruit-flavored wine. In fact, the first thing I ever got drunk on was I think, grape Ripple.
Oh, that's sad.
Oh, I know. Watermelon Ripple, that's what it was. Oh, that made me sick. How to turn on... my son left the studio. It's okay. loss. Oh, the people we lost. Mac Miller, Kate Spade, Anthony Bourdain, Stan Lee, Aretha Franklin. Oh. Movies, professional sports teams, politicians, TV shows... Video games. This is fun. That's in the U.S., but you can of course change the locality.
Would it be a favor? Go to the bottom, would you?
Well, I'll go global first, okay, global. And then I'll go to the bottom. This is the very bottom.
So learn how the lists are populated. I was curious what it was.
You want me to click that link? Learn how the lists are populated. Lists are based on search terms, Jeff.
Oh, so it's obvious. Okay.
It had the highest spike this year.
Never mind. It's okay. I got it, Google.
Oh, I see. It's based on spike.
Spike.
Okay. Not total popularity, because that would get really boring.
Exactly.
Because it would be very similar.
Exactly. It's ballistic. Trendy. It's like the Billboard charts.
Yeah.
So try Germany.
Oh, let's see what they were searching for in Germany.
Yeah, it's got to be things they're scared of.
You're going to have to translate. Things they're scared of, says Jeff. Allgemein Suchbegriff.
Yeah, I don't know.
WM. I don't know.
Babylon Berlin. Have you seen that show?
Yes. Awesome.
Oh, that's great.
Oh.
Awesome. It's the number one series in Germany.
Is there a second season coming?
Yes. So the story of that is interesting. It's based on a series of books. Very famous bestsellers in Germany, and one per year, starting in, 1922 or 23, and going all the way up to 39. So it's following the rise of Hitler, but they're mysteries where the Nazi rise is in the background, right? So they're planning to make all of them, I believe.
Wow. Now, do those two main characters stay?
Yeah.
And I love her. She's just great.
Yeah. I think.
Lisa Frias.
Yeah. Really, really good if you haven't seen it, but it is in German.
It's in German subtitle, but it's the most expensive show ever made in Germany. The production value is incredible.
Most expensive show ever made anywhere.
Also an English dub on Netflix, and it is a crime.
Do not watch it. So
don't
watch
the dub.
You're exactly right. You can turn on English dubs on I was watching a German version of Stranger Things, kind of, and I thought it was the worst because I was listening to the dub.
Oh, yeah, I know which one you mean, yeah.
And then if you watch it in German, like the acting's suddenly good.
Yeah.
You can't understand it, but they have subtitles.
Is there a little video to share with our audience here?
Of Babylon Berlin?
Babylon Berlin.
Probably on YouTube. Is it on Netflix? Is that where it is?
It is on Netflix,
Okay. Let's give them credit. Here's the trailer from Netflix. It was really great because historically, and the reason it was so expensive is they really recreated Berlin in the 20s. Friend
is doing business on the
It's
side.
A little adult. It is a mystery.
Oh, wow, the trailer is in English.
I'll deal with it.
Oh, it's the dubbed trailer.
Oh, no.
Oh, that's in German.
What happened?
Oh, that was the Russian.
So that's why I had subtitles. He is a World War I veteran who's still suffering PTSD, and it's... But he's also a police detective. And the Russians are involved.
And when I
start 28, I don't know why I thought it started earlier.
Eyes.
That might make sense. Yeah, Hitler. Now.
Help! Help me!
Excuse me, Detective Sergeant, but this man may have been tortured.
Just see why the dub is so bad. Stop it now. No idea. Excuse me, Detective Sergeant.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, and that's the Google Change Log. Let's take a break. Your picks of the week. And actually, I should give you a chance if you want to do any stories I missed, because there's quite a few stories I have left out here, including the Australian anti-encryption law, the better, more positive, but less flesh-colored Tumblr. Stalling smartphone sales.
You want to do that now or after the commercial?
I'll let you both pick. David, you pick one, and Jeff, you pick a story that you that I missed, because there's quite a few. But first, a word from our sponsor, Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups. And I'll tell you why it's for startups. First of all, it's fast, and if you're a startup, you know everything you got to get done. Got to move on. 5 minutes, an online application. And you're done. Underwriting is based on one thing, cash in your bank account, your cash flow. They can offer your company, because of that, you can offer your company 10 to 20 times higher limits than other corporate credit cards with no personal liability. And I completely understand the value of this. You also get great high value rewards that are tailored to startups, to modern business, high multipliers on the stuff you spend the most on. 7X on rideshare. 3 times on restaurants and travel, 2 times on software. There's no limit on how many points you can earn. And this is the best part. I love this. Points can be redeemed for statement credit. on transactions. Exclusive offers with some of the best technology brands and services that you might be using as a new business. AWS, Google, Salesforce, WeWork. So because Brex is underwriting your company, that means no minimum operating history. There's no painful paper application. No personal liability. They merely use the cash raised by your business to extend credit. So you don't need a credit score. You don't need a social security number. You don't need a security deposit. It's a Visa card. It's a real credit card. But it's better in a lot of ways. It's very high tech. First time I used the card, I used it as a restaurant. Immediately get a text that said, ah, we got your transaction. Take a picture of the receipt. I thought, oh, that's interesting. literally within a second of using it. So I took a picture of the receipt. They said, oh, good. That matches. We've categorized it. We put it in QuickBooks. It's already done. What? Don't even save the receipt. Crumple it up. Throw it away. You just reply to the text message with a picture of a receipt, and it's automatically matched to the transaction. Complete statement descriptions clearly tell you what you've spent on. Of course, it works not only with QuickBooks, but all the major software programs for accounting. I love this. Join the thousands of startups and tech companies who use Brex to manage their growing business needs and earn valuable rewards while they're doing so. Get the card free, and because you're watching the show, your card fees will be waived in perpetuity. Forever. Brex.com/twit. Brex.com/twit. And you want to use that URL because that'll eliminate the card fees in perpetuity. I like saying that. In perpetuity. Brex.com/twit. We thank Brex for supporting this week in Google. David, there were some stories I missed. Was there anything important? Oh, David's muted.
An important story. I don't know. I thought that this isn't particularly Google related, but it was a bit of a funny one this week. Samsung with Supreme. I don't know if you guys had heard about this.
No, tell me about it.
So they had they launched their phone with the cutout notch, which was in the document here, and they launched.
They have
it in
it's
China.
Like a dot. It's not a whole notch. It's just a
yeah,
dot.
Yeah, it's a cutout, a punch hole, punch hole notch. Yeah. So they launched launched the phone, and they announced they're doing a partnership with Supreme, which you know is so hot right now. And
what is Supreme?
Supreme is a fashion brand. They do like pop-up stores, and people go buy Supreme merch. And it's very popular with the young people.
Except
and
it would look a little foolish on me.
Except it turned out that the real Supreme doesn't have any kind of distribution or IP rights in China. So they partnered with an Italian company that used a copyright or a trademark loophole in Europe.
Suprema. It's yes. Suprema.
Yeah, so Samsung, you know, they're huge. You would think, how would they think this is a good idea to partner with an obviously fraudulent version of Supreme? Now, the Italian version of Supreme argues that, hey, they're legally protected and there's nothing Supreme can do about it. But that's not really, as we say, a good defense. That's just like, you can't sue us. Okay, that's definitely grounds to do whatever you want, I guess. But so they're now reconsidering.
They haven't walked away. Apparently. They haven't walked away, but they're thinking about it.
They are. They are considering it. So this was translated from Mandarin. It said, recently Samsung Electronics announced that the launch of the Galaxy A8S that will cooperate with Supreme Italia in the Chinese market. We are currently reevaluating this cooperation, and we deeply regret the inconvenience caused.
See, this I'm really glad you brought this up because I saw this story. I didn't get it. I'm not fashion forward like you are, David, and so I had no idea who Supreme was in the first place. So that now I understand. Thank you.
Yeah, I think that sweater proves your point, Leo.
it's a festive holiday.
I know. Sorry about that. Sweater, but it actually is. It's Supreme color.
Is Supreme red?
It is.
Yeah, it matches the Supreme red. Yes, it does. So there's a Supreme T-shirt that costs $1,150.
What? Why?
There's a Supreme crowbar. I don't know if this, it says it's official. I don't know if it's streetwearofficial.com. Oh, I guess that's not official. Supreme.
Well, this is part of the confusion. Here it is, Supreme New York City. You can tell it's hip because they're using Courier as the typeface on their website. They must be hip. Well, look at this fine reflective camo. You see that? That's what I could wear. This beautiful, it's not bad, $178 for a Polar Tech hooded raglan jacket.
I guess they must become collector's items or something.
It's sold out. Yeah. It was sold out.
Everything's sold out. The resale market for this stuff is extremely hot, and I think that's most of the hype.
Yeah, it's all sold out. You can't. Oh, I'm sorry. You can't. No.
It's just sold out to you.
I can get this one.
Oh, that.
I can get this one. Let's get a large.
Oh, please don't. Yeah.
It's striped. magenta. Leo,
as a friend,
it's not sold out. It's all cotton.
No, no. Rib Leo, color. Stop.
I'm adding it to my cart.
No, Leo.
It's in the car.
No.
What if I wear that next week? I'm wearing it next week.
Now.
No, I'm not. Too bad this is sold out. I really wanted this one. That's the shirt I wanted.
Oh, my Lord.
It looks like an orange sherbet cone with a lime little lime side. What about just plain white? This is a vampire waffle. See, I can see, but these are all sold out. See, the one I bought was not sold out. This isn't
sold out.
There's a reason,
Leo.
This is poop brown. It's not sold out. All right, Jeff, mine,
I didn't know this. I'm sure you all knew this. I didn't know this. Stripe, which is a company that does transactions,
yes,
right, for companies?
Yes.
They are publishing books.
What?
As I was in Strand Bookstore today, and I see this interesting book, The Revolt of the Public, which was originally released in 2014 by Martin Gurry, and it's re-released, and I had never read the original, and it's a really nice production. It's beautifully done, printing and all that. Who's Stripe Press? And so they've released, 4 books so far. But it's really interesting to me that you have a company that's using this for branding, and it's another way to support, like, books.
They're specializing in books about economic and technological advancement, which is, you know, kind of what Stripe's all about.
But it's not really native content in the sense they're not going to end up talking about Stripe in it. It's
interesting.
Book.
I think this the publishing.
They associate with them.
It looks nicely done. Mitchell Waldrop.
Really well published.
Yeah.
Really nicely done. Nicely designed. Different.
I love the cover art on all of these. Fantastic. Yeah,
they're just great. And not expensive, $20 and $17.
What a strange thing to get into.
Yeah. God bless them, though.
Stripe partners with millions of the world's most innovative business organizations that will shape the world tomorrow. These businesses are a result of many different inputs. Perhaps the most important ingredient is ideas. Stripe Press highlights ideas we think can be broadly useful.
Hey, Stripe, if you'd like a 10th anniversary edition of What Would Google Do? Let's talk.
Yeah. Yeah. Very interesting.
Very cool.
Okay.
Very cool. Yeah. I've ordered The Revolt of the Public, of course. I'm sure it mentions Gutenberg, so I have to.
It's revolting.
So after I was on MSNBC this morning, put the tape up, and somebody who hadn't watched it, and somebody made a joke. I said, well, the phone knows where you are so you can find the nearest Pizza Hut. And somebody came in, a beloved Twig fan came in and said, Pizza Hut, Jeff, you should have said Chipotle.
They knew.
And then somebody else came in and said, well, did he mention Gutenberg? And in fact, I did.
Oh, so my God. You mentioned Gutenberg.
You got Gutenberg onto MSNBC.
Nice.
Well, the segment was very short.
Well, next time, ask for more time. Jeff, do you have a number for us?
Yes, I do. I already gave up one of them.
Yeah, so we used one of your numbers.
Yeah, so that's fine. I volunteered that. Oh, I guess we got to do this one. So Verizon's Oath has done a breakdown of the brand.
Yeah.
They've written down $4.6 billion, leaving a brand value of $200 million.
How much?
Mind you, they bought Huffington Post alone, AOL did, for more than $300 million. Oh my God. They bought Yahoo and AOL for something akin to $4 billion.
$4.5 billion.
Yeah, each, I think, right?
AOL was $4.4 billion. So a total of $8.9 billion.
So even then, they were down to half of that in the brand value, down to $4.8 billion, and they wrote off $4.6 billion of that.
So basically, is that saying it was a flop?
Hello.
Hello.
My tweet was, what were they thinking? Yeah, it was the last effort to do a volume-based content business as if that's going to win, and sorry. Now, it's a little confusing in terms of, maybe you can explain this to me, because I, you know, what's the difference between writing down the goodwill and the actual business, which are different? So they wrote down the goodwill.
Yeah, I don't know. I imagine there's tax. There's a tax benefit.
Tax
would be my guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
They are also giving early buyouts to 10,000 employees. So
10,000?
Yeah, they only have 40,000.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a significant downsizing. Couldn't happen to a nicer company.
Jeez.
Although, didn't they? They used to be 9X. They used to be your local phone company.
Well, and the phone company, of course, now AT&T owns Time Warner.
Right.
So they're going into the content business. But folks, let me tell you, content's a crappy business.
So
content over. It's a Gutenberg era thing.
Is next. This worse than the Time Warner AOL deal? No. This is only the second worst.
No, I'm still suffering for that one.
Oh, that's right. You were Mr. Time Warner. That's
right. Oh, I finally, just the last of my original stock is now something else.
It must be fun to track your stock. You now own a bit of Stripe Publishing. Congratulations. Like, what has it turned into today? David, do you have a pick or anything you want to share with the audience?
You know, I was looking for something, and I wasn't able to come up with anything.
Got nothing.
Anything great. It's been a bit of a slow news week for us.
Come on, what's
here,
your favorite phone these days? What's your favorite Android device?
Oh, man. I mean, honestly, that's it's a tough pick.
You like the OnePlus 6T better than the Pixel?
That's a hard one. I don't think I like it better, but I think it's a lot better bang for your buck. And if you do want a number, I mean, OnePlus's sales of the 6T are up 250% over the 6. So they're seeing big returns on that T-Mobile deal. And they just came out with a new version of the phone that's got 10 gigabytes of RAM that nobody needs. But, you know, it's a partnership with McLaren. And I think they're in a business where saturation is really starting to take its toll on a lot of the big players. OnePlus is up and coming in a way that is pretty interesting to watch, especially here in the U.S. market, which is, you know, really proved kind of intractable in terms of unlocked phones picking up. So, you know, their deal with T-Mobile is definitely changing things up.
I talked to the VP of device PR, Huawei America, and she said the reason that we didn't introduce the P20 in America and now its replacement, the Mate, is because we didn't have a carrier deal. And she said, without a carrier deal, it's hopeless. You don't want to spend millions marketing a phone. If you don't have a carrier deal, you're just not going to sell many devices. So we're the one country where Huawei doesn't sell that phone.
Well, and then they got kind of banned anyway.
It didn't matter.
Because the reason they don't have a carrier deal is because the government stopped them from running.
That's exactly right. Because they announced Verizon and AT&T deals at CES a year ago. And they had to cancel them, and they were peeved. And that's when they said, well, we can't sell this phone in the U.S. So this is proving it true. OnePlus's experience shows, it helps a lot. It helps a lot, 250%. To have a carrier deal. Well, I think we've had a very nice show. I guess the one thing I would share with you is that DuckDuckGo is now just Duck. Duck!
Duck!
And you know what? This shows Google has goodwill. Google, when they bought On2, which was the video codec company, acquired in 2010 the duck.com domain name. DuckDuckGo CEO Gabriel Weinberg said, yes, Google has given us the duck.com name.
Nice. You see, you think these big companies are nasty.
No.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're good neighbors.
Gabriel said, we're pleased Google has chosen to transfer ownership of duck.com to DuckDuckGo. Having duck.com will make it easier for people to use DuckDuckGo. So if you go to duck.com, spell that carefully. Don't let autocorrect get a handle. You will get DuckDuckGo. Yeah, you would think Google would say under over our dead body, but I think really that's appropriate.
Yeah, I feel like Google just felt that domain wasn't all it was quacked up to be.
It's as if fate and your whole life has brought you to that moment, David.
Thank you.
You've been storing that up.
I knew there was a reason we booked David this
week. Brilliant.
I might have been waiting.
David Ruddock. Blame him. He's the managing editor of Android Police. Great to have you. Thank you for being here this week.
Thank you for having me. It was great.
What is RDRV3? That's your Twitter.
It's actually, that's my initials. Oh. Yeah.
Robert David Ruddock the third.
Something like that.
Oh, that's cool. That's nice.
Randolph?
Richard? Rudolph.
Get more 1950s.
Roger?
Not quite 1930s.
Roger David Ruddock? I like RDR. That's good. I'd keep that.
It's Roy, and considering I was born in the 1980s, I don't think anybody would.
Roy Ruddock III. And you're the third, I take it, right? Your dad and grandpa?
That's cool. I am.
That's nice.
But you have a country music career ahead of you, so Roy Ruddock. It's a perfect country music name. Yeah.
It is. It's great.
Really?
Jeff Jarvis.
Alliterative in everything.
Well, Jeff Jarvis is almost a made-up name. That alliteration alone makes it worth its weight in gold. JJ.
It is. Yeah. That's why I alliterate. I have this propensity for alliteration. My book titles are alliterative.
Oh.
I'm alliterative. My kids are alliterative.
Your kids are alliterative.
Yeah.
Well, at least they're not illegitimate. The director of the Townite Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Mr. Jeff Jarvis. BuzzMachine.com is the place to find his blog, at Jeff Jarvis on the Twitter. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure. And this was fun. And David, come back.
Please do, David. A lot of fun.
Really enjoyed having
you. Happy to be on.
Yeah. We do this show every Wednesday, about 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 21:30 UTC. You can watch or listen live if you go to twit.tv/live. We've got a live stream there. If you do that, join us in the chat room as well, irc.twit.tv. That's a great place to go. Let me think here. If you want on-demand versions, everything we do you can get on demand at the website. So in the case of this show, twit.tv/twig, twit.tv/twig. Or you can subscribe in your favorite podcast application. Easy enough to find that. Just search for This Week in Google. Or you can even ask your voice assistant, play This Week in Google podcast. And in most cases, it will play the right thing. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a great week. We'll see you next time on Twig. Bye-bye.